Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a live special edition of Way In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin. Tonight, got Chris Ricketts with me. How you doing, Mr. Ricketts?
Man, Tarvino, I'm doing absolutely great, man. It's Wednesday. We're halfway through the work week. Can't wait for the weekend. Got a lot of interesting news and stories going on in the sports world. Just ready to get to it, man.
Wow, what a busy week of sports already. We have Junior Seau's death today. We have the NBA playoffs to talk about. We're going to talk about a college playoff system today, what's been discussing with all the commissioners of each conference. Man, there's so much going on today. It's just, how do you fit this all in 1 hour?
It's going to be tough, but we'll get to it.
That's going to be the key. And also, big news, the Bounty Gate, 4 New Orleans Saints players suspended today, some harsher than others. We're going to talk about Roger Goodell, the commissioner, and we want the callers, everyone, to weigh in. What you think? Was the punishment fair? 646-716-5564. And we're not going to waste any time. Junior Seau today, Chris. That was very tragic to the sports world. Junior Seau was one of the best football players that I've ever watched. And today, you know, he took his own life. And so it's just a sad day in the NFL. I know there's a lot of Chargers fans out there, Patriots fans, Miami fans, just Junior Seau fans, period. So it's just real tragic.
Yeah, I mean, sad news for all the Charger fans out there. You know, you hit it spot on, man. I mean, Junior Seau, man, what a talent. I mean, this guy was just an electric linebacker. I mean, he could just all over the field, high-energy guy. And, you know, preliminary reports say it was a, you know, self-inflicted gunshot wound to the chest. And, you know, just a sad, sad day. And, you know, you just hate to see this. And, you know, I just, all my thoughts and prayers go out to the Seau family. You know, hopefully they can get through this trying time.
Well, Chris, it was very sad when you're seeing on TV his mom. It was like in shock. Like she doesn't believe her son could do this. And it, you know, the first thing I thought of, Chris, when I heard this was concussion syndrome. A lot of these players with repeated hits to the head, you know, it causes depression, severe depression, actually. Just a lot of symptoms and bad things can happen from this. And he never filed a lawsuit against the NFL for concussions like the Atlanta player, was it Easterling, that committed suicide just a couple of weeks ago. So
yeah.
It just made me think of our game of football, how safe is it and what are they going to do to try to change it? You know, it's hard to prevent concussions because your neck, you know, is involved anytime your brain gets jarred. So it just made me think of, you know, some people can get so depressed and it was caused by that possibly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you talk about the CTS syndrome. I know that there was a former Chicago Bear player. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but I think a couple of years ago, you know, he took his own life, and he actually donated his brain for research for this particular disease, you know. And yeah, I don't know if Roger Goodell is looking into this, you know, and I'm sure that by this Junior Seau incident, that'll bring a little bit more, you know, more awareness to the table. So, you know, definitely the NFL, you know, I heard reports that there was like over 1,000 of the former players that have brought lawsuits against the NFL over these different kind of diseases, you know, related to concussions and stuff like that. So, you figure this is definitely going to raise that awareness even more. So I'm sure Roger Goodell is trying to, you know, formulate some type of strategy to to figure out what the root cause of this stuff is. And you know, that's why we see all these, you know, just like with the Bounty Gate, all these extra precautions on, you know, hits to the head, because now it's just more important than ever to make sure that these players are safe.
It's like smoking almost. Like a long time ago, everyone smoked. They didn't know what the long-term effect, you know, what could. Now people realize that, okay, these guys played football in the 80s, 70s, 80s. They're suffering big time from this. And the more research that comes out and the more studying that happens, there's probably going to be a lot more of it. It's just so violent, the NFL game. But the last person I would want to see trying to change it is Goodell. I think he would do it all the wrong way. And my thoughts and prayers go out to the Junior Seau's family tonight. And I know that's just a tragic way. And hopefully something will come back that he didn't take his own life. You know, maybe it was just an accident. That's what I'm hoping to see. Because you think someone with that kind of life that he had, that goes to show you money can't buy everything. You know, happiness and peace of mind, if that is the case. But my prayers go out to him. I know yours do as well.
Yeah.
And so if you're listening out there, you're a Chargers fan, we're sorry for you, and our prayers will be with you. But we're going to stay in the NFL, and we're going to talk about Bounty Gate a little bit. You know, just when you thought it was going away, it pops back up. Mr. Goodell, you know, the commissioner he is, he suspended four players for the New Orleans Saints today, and the biggest one that got hit was linebacker John Vilma. He got suspended for a whole entire season starting today. He doesn't get to practice with the team up till the start of the season like the other players do. He's gone for the entire year, just like Sean Payton.
Yeah, I mean, Goodell is definitely dropping the hammer on this Bounty Gate stuff. And, man, I mean, what else can go wrong for the New Orleans Saints right now? I mean, come on, you know, the whole Bounty Gate goes down. Their coach gets suspended for the entire year. You know, a couple of their assistants get suspended for a number of games. The ex-defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, gets suspended for the whole year. I know he's with the Rams now. And then, you know, then you have all this. And, oh, then we got the Mickey Loomis, you know, wiretapping scandal going on right along with it. And then now they're starting to suspend players. So, I mean, it almost feels like that the New Orleans Saints, they might as well just pack it in right now. I mean, because who knows, in a couple months, they might be able to field the team.
Exactly, and today was just another message Goodell sent. And the players, Vilma especially, you know, he said they don't have evidence on me, but Goodell does have evidence. He's not revealing it now, but there's no way he would suspend these guys without some kind of proof that they were involved in either a leadership role on the team and then took a bribe, you know, paid players to take hits on people or accepted money. Goodell's going after the people in leadership on the team, the team captains, someone, you know, a good influence on the team that promoted this or actually accepted it. So some of the smaller players that maybe participated in it, they're not going to be suspended. They might be fined and it'll be something small. But you know as well as I do, Vilma's one of the leaders of that team. And he offered $10,000 in the 2009 and 10 NFC Championship games to put hits on Brett Favre and Kurt Warner.
And going back to your point, you know, Goodell's definitely got some type of evidence on Vilma, because the financial impact to Jonathan Vilma, I heard today, was like somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.4 million. That's what this is going to cost him to miss an entire season's worth of pay. I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, putting a penalty that's going to have that much of a financial impact on somebody. You know he's got some type of evidence. So, yeah, Jonathan Vilma, you know, wow, what a punishment. I mean,
well,
and to lose the captain of their defense, that's just going to be devastating for the Saints' defense.
Well, think about this, Chris. They have Anthony Hargrove and another linebacker that played for the Packers. One, I think they both got suspended 8 games.
Yeah.
So the Green Bay Packers are suffering for this because they put these guys in. So Goodell, at least if he's being harsh, it's not just to the Saints alone. It's it's to everyone involved. And trust me, all the listeners out there, I have no respect for Goodell. I cannot stand him as a commissioner. But if he does have evidence of this, then what else can you do? If you do nothing, you're going to open the NFL and yourself up for lawsuits.
Well, and this goes back to the point I was making earlier, regarding the Junior Seau incident. You know, right now I heard reports that, you know, currently there's like over 1,000 different lawsuits against the NFL by former players on, and basically the basis of those lawsuits are that the NFL didn't do enough to, you know, protect these guys while they were playing. And so by this suspension, you see that this is Goodell's number one priority, is to clean up the sport, make it safer, and basically to hold everybody accountable. And let's face it, the NFL is a business, and when you have a business, it's your job as the commissioner or the CEO to protect the image. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's protecting the image of the NFL. And, you know, I heard some kind of crazy stat that, you know, prior to him taking over as commissioner, they had like, I want to say 70 or 80 different incidents where players were arrested. And this past season, they had a total number of like 16. So, you know, his punishment, or, you know, his message is definitely getting across. And so you have to commend him for that. Now, I'm kind of with you. I really don't care for Goodell that much. I mean, I think he takes – it's almost like he's on a power trip sometimes. But, you know, he is doing some good for the game. You know, he's taking the NFL to the next level, much like what David Stern did with the NBA. But, yeah, you can tell this is definitely his number one priority in cleaning up the game.
I agree, and we're going to go to the lines. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
Yeah, that's Sonny Clark. Hey, how's it going tonight, guys?
Good. How are you, Sonny?
Hey, how's it going,
yeah,
Sonny?
I'm doing great. I have not seen your chat room. I was, if you can open up I don't know if you have a chat room open or not, but I agree with you about Roger Goodell. I kind of compare Roger Goodell to that assistant principal who really wants to be the leader, and he's just in charge of the suspensions and the people get in trouble, but he's not really running the NFL. There's no question who's running the NFL, and that's the owners. And the owners definitely have full control over it, but when it comes to something like this, that the reason why he's acting like a bigwig is because that's all he does. I mean, he doesn't really do much, and he gets paid an awful lot of money to get that done as well.
Yeah, he's definitely compensated financially for his work, you know, as commissioner. Tarvin, you got anything to add?
Yeah, you know, Sonny, I guess the first experience with Goodell is what rubbed people the wrong way is the little things that he made big, like fining a player $50,000 for saluting, and things like that. And now when it comes time for him to lay the hammer down, people think he's a joke now. And I think this is the serious business if Goodell has proof that these guys in leadership were doing this. But I think Goodell's blown his whole reputation already. What do you think, Sonny, about his reputation? Do you think he'll ever be able to get it back and be taken serious?
Well, he supposedly he has the respect of the people in the NFL. And the reason why he's got that respect, which is we all know it's not there, is because that he can't drop the dime on anybody. And that's one of the problems in finding the right player. One of the reasons why people don't respect him like you guys or I is because he's taken away from the game. And the fact that he takes away from the game as far as rules and regulations and all these new things that they're adding into the sport, it takes away from what the game really is. The game is a hard-hitting football game. This is not flag football. It's hard hitting. These things happen. And a lot of the fines that people are getting and players are getting are last minute head ducks. And, you know, half the time they're asking for it. You know, when you drop your head and when a player is going after a tackler, he's got to put his head down a little bit. Okay, and if another guy puts his head down, of course that's going to look like a jar rocket. So the problem is that he's using his interpretation of what the rules are to go ahead and hand out those suspensions. And one of the problems is the guy never played the game. And some of the players take exception to that, because if the guy played the game or understood the game a little bit better, maybe that the fines and everything would not be where they're at. Until that changes, that's going to be a problem. Now, as far as all the other stuff, as far as the NFL, Roger Goodell and all that, you know, and the Spygate, or no, this one's Bountygate, Bountygate, you know, he had to come down on him because we lose Junior Seau because of, you know, and I know it's probably directed towards the Dave Duerson incident when he shot himself. So they, you know, I don't know. I, you know, all these things that are going on in the NFL, it just seems like to me, you know, that Roger Goodell could handle himself just a little bit better. So you're right. I think the respect is gone. And the fact of the matter is the players don't respect him. And just to add even insult to injury, the owners don't even respect him anyway. But they have to let him do what he does. But in reality, we all know what he really is. He's just one of these guys that are there and is going to cause problems for any player who plays the game hard. And that's what ends up happening with Roger Goodell.
Well,
yeah, I agree.
You know, to me, what he's doing, he's just basically, like you, I think you kind of referred to it, he's just basically a puppet for the owners. And the reason why
puppet
is because he's making money for all these owners. And, you know, all the different rule changes that we've seen over the years, which what they're saying is for player safety, is really nothing more than an effort just to make the NFL a much more of an offensive game, because people want to go to the NFL. They want to see the numbers, you know, the huge offensive numbers put up. And it's almost like defense just has to take a back seat. And it's making the NFL just a boatload of money. I mean, we're talking, this is a $1 billion corporation in the NFL, and that's really what I see, all these
billion
different things that are going down in the NFL over the last couple of seasons, or really the last 10 years. It's just nothing more than to make it an offensive game, to make it appealing to the masses, and to bring in the money.
Now, the question I would have to you guys, okay, with all the guys who are filing because of they were quote-unquote not told about the concussions and what they can do and everything else, do you really, and this is my opinion, but do you really honestly think they would have taken one step off that football field, whether it was Dave Duerson or anybody else who is standing in line regarding this you know, lawsuit against the NFL? To me, see, this is the part on the NFL that I will stand behind them. None of those guys would have never taken one step off the football field if they had the choice. And so it's a little bit hypocrisy going on there, and that's one of the problems that I have as far as the players. But at the same time, I know what the problems are. I deal with concussion syndrome, you know, weekly because of all the hits that I've taken in my life. So, you know, it's one of these things, but would I have changed anything about when I was playing or when I did it? Hell no, no one would have changed it, and they haven't changed it. And hopefully, as far as the loss of Junior Seau is concerned, hopefully something will be good come from the tragic loss of him and Dave Duerson, who did it back, I think it was November. So two great players in the NFL, you know, pretty much put themselves on the line for everybody else. Hopefully something will come from it. But at the same time, let's not kid anybody. You know, the fact of the matter is every football player would still be out on the football field. I don't see any of them go, whoa, this is going to do what to my brain? Okay, I think I'm going to hang them up. I just don't see that happening.
You remember the movie Any Given Sunday?
Yep.
The guy had the concussions real bad, and he kept playing. He knew that he could die on the next hit.
Lawrence Taylor played that spot.
Exactly, and he wanted his bonus. He knew he was one sack away from getting that bonus, so he didn't care about life or death.
Yep.
He wanted that money, and he was a warrior. And I think a lot of players are like that. And I have a question for you two. Can they really sue the NFL for, you know, the concussions back in the day when research hasn't even been really done to prove that at that time, you know, that it could cause real bad injuries going forward? So they didn't know. You know, I mean, back then they just went out and played and hit each other. There was never any warnings, you know, really, or any research, medical research. So what do you think, Sonny?
Well,
could they sue them and really win?
Well, it's a matter of when they knew. I think that's where the question it really lies. I mean, because then they'll take it, you know, did they know back in the 60s when, you know, in the 70s when you had Conrad Doebler going out and bashing people upside the head? Did it happen in the 80s when Lawrence Taylor was going out doing what he was doing? When did they exactly know? And then if and when they exactly knew, how did they cover it up? I think it's going to be based upon how they covered it up. Can they sue? You know, if there is something as far as you can prove that there was some kind of negligence and, you know, fair warning, I think, you know, that probably would give them grounds to go ahead and sue. So, yeah, I think they do have something to sue about it, but at the same time, the players or the teams and the owners didn't protect themselves. All they had to do, really in reality, is as soon as they knew, get out the warning to the players and say, if you want to continue to play, you got to sign off on it. And that's all they had to do. And that's the arrogance of the NFL. And that's one of the problems. You said $1 billion industry. Well, it says that it's 9. I think it's 11 or 12, possibly 13. I mean, these guys are not walking off the football field. They're just not going to. There's just too much money involved with it, and they would have taken the risk just like the guy in Any Given Sunday. And also, I've talked to many football players. I've interviewed probably close to over 100, at least over 100 football players. And every one of them say they would not have got off the football field. And number two, as far as any kind of thing, you know, that's what they're known for. That was their job. So it's just a question of who it would be about and whether or not the players. And if you also look at some of these players, these are the players that had no benefits of these huge, big contracts. We're talking about the huge, big contracts are really within the last 6-7 years of the NFL. You go beyond, you go before that, a $5 million, $6 million contract was huge. You know, in the 80s, I mean, I was watching a thing on Herschel Walker when he signed with the USFL for $4 million for 4 years. You know, that's a drop in the bucket compared to these guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to look at it that way. But, you know, to answer your question, I think actually they do have a right to sue. Frankly, I think they're going to win. And, you know, more than the fact that I think they're going to win probably is because, you know, the public's not stupid. They're hearing about this, okay? And I honestly think that the public would love to take a stab at the NFL, whether that be the people sitting on the jury, you know, that will decide this kind of thing. This thing will never see a jury. This thing will get paid out. This thing will get settled out because this will cost them millions and possibly even a billion or so.
Yeah. My thoughts exactly, Sonny. You know, sit here as we're discussing it. Sit here thinking there's no way that this thing ever sees a jury. Goodell will come to some type of settlement with the players' union or the ex-players involved and make
Absolutely.
Sure it's kind of swept under the rug.
Absolutely,
hey, Sonny. On the bonuses, like some of these players, you tell me if I'm wrong. The contracts, you know, they get a certain amount of money extra if they play all the games without injury. Isn't that a true statement?
Well, it just depends on how it's written. I mean, you got some players that are out there who have been injured before, and it does get written into a contract. If you do this amount for this amount of time, you get paid for it. And you can miss it by a yard, and they don't have to pay it. Will they, though? Probably. But it's just an incentive base to make sure that when they sign a guy to a big contract, that the guy's going to be there for him. And that's one of the big, big problems when you take a look at players and what's going on. And the guy that really comes to mind when I think about it is Deshaun Alexander. After that guy just went off, you know, at the running back, broke all the records and everything else, the next 4 years this guy couldn't stay on the football field for 4 or 5 football games, and the Seattle Seahawks just dropped all their money on them. And I think that, you know, those incentive type of contracts are very good, but at the same time, I think there's got to be something that's done within the contracts for the NFL players. So when you sign a 5-year deal, you get something for 5 years instead of the fact that you play, you know, if you don't really, you know, I guess live up to expectations or whatever, there still has to be something on that contract that they're liable for the 5 years, not just the guaranteed money that they signed up before the 5 years. There's got to be a base that still gets paid to protect the players for the 5 years. So, you know, their investment on one team and something happens, they still got something to go for at least those 5 years. That's what happens in baseball, and I think to a certain extent it should be into football.
Yeah, I look at guys, I'm going to ask a question too. I mean, what else can they do to change football to make it safer without changing the entire game? There's really nothing you can do, and if they start tampering with this, football is going to just disappear almost. There's no way you can play the game any safer than what they do now.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tarvin. You know, at some point, the public and everybody else is just going to have to accept, and the players as well. I mean, football is an inherent dangerous sport, just like NASCAR racing. I mean, those guys that race in NASCAR, they know the danger. They know what they're signing up for. And, you know, at some point, everybody's just going to have to accept that. I mean, and I think player safety right now in the NFL is probably at an all-time high. I mean, what else can they do other than put, you know, some flags on the side of their hips and play flag football? I mean, I just don't see what else, you know, they can do to really help clean up the game and make it more safe at this point.
That's why bounty gate is so big, guys. I mean, if you take a look at it, it threatens the progress of football. And it's not about what's out on the football field. It's about what ends up in the owner's pockets at the end of the year. And that's what it is. Let's be honest. No one gives a rat's big fat butt about those players who've gotten hurt over the years because the monies are already in their pocket. They don't care. And they look at those players as independent contractors, which they are with the backing of the Players Association, but they're independent contractors. So if they really cared about them, they'd take the independent contractors off them and actually pay them the salaries that they signed up for on the contract. That's why Terrell Owens has got a big, bad, you know, image, okay? But that big, bad image comes from the fact that he called the NFL owners just like that. He treated the owners just like they could have treated him. And that is saying, well, you know, guys, you know, our contract is not settled. I mean, you know, you can cut me at any time. I can cut you at any time. We renegotiate, or that's not going to be a problem. Or that's going to be a problem. I think Terrell Owens was one of the first players to do that, and now he's known. Now he's known as a pain in the butt, and he got that label. And for the last 3 years, Terrell Owens has been a model citizen out on the football field. Well, not last year, but he probably would have. In Buffalo, no problems at all. Cincinnati, all he did was lead his team, okay, in yards and touchdowns. So, you know, you get that rep of standing up against the NFL, you get blackballed. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see that lawsuit going together and you have so many players go, so you don't get that blackball image, because there's some big names in that lawsuit.
Yeah.
So, Sonny, if John Vilma, his suspension is 1 year, if he gives a lot of resistance, do you think he'll be blackballed?
Oh, absolutely. I honestly do. And frankly, thanks for breaking that, guys. I didn't necessarily know they got to the players as of yet. I've been kind of busy and not able to keep up with whatever. After the draft, I kind of just, you know, lost out on too much interest in football. I didn't necessarily know that they came down on Jonathan Vilma. When I heard that, when you said that, I was shocked. I mean, I really was shocked. But Jonathan Vilma, probably one of the best players at his position, right, you know, 2 years ago, there weren't very many better players at his position than Jonathan Vilma. Just wasn't. And the fact of the matter is that they found a way of motivating themselves and they added a little money onto it. And that, it just say what you want, every single team did it. This is the team that got busted. And that's the reason why they got to come down hard on them, because of the concussions and because of everything that, and the backlash of all this, you know, players, you know, suing the NFL and everything. They got to make it look like they care kind of thing. So that's why they're coming down hard on them big, big time. And I was completely shocked that Jonathan Vilma got nailed for the whole year. And then I think you said there was a guy that got actually traded up to Green Bay that got suspended for 8 games. Who was that again?
it was Anthony Hargrove. He's a defensive end. And Scott Suita, I can't pronounce his name. He was a linebacker at the Green Bay that was saying he's got 8 games. Suita,
wow. And then Will Smith got 4 games as well. He's still with the Saints.
How do they separate the guys who, I mean, you know, someone had to do some serious narking to find out that Jonathan Vilma was one of the ringleaders of this whole thing. I mean, someone had to really narc on it pretty hard.
Well, the reason why they gave Vilma the year was because he offered $10,000 of his own money in that championship game against, I believe, the Vikings.
Yeah, it was, where Brett Favre looked like hamburger after the game.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. I remember watching that game, guys, and I was like, oh, my God, is he going to make it past out of this game? They were hitting him. I mean, it was clean most of the time, but it was very, like, punishing, you know?
Yeah, but that tells you one thing about Brett Favre. You know, the guy hip-hops, you know, here, there, will I pay, will I won't, I don't know. But I'll tell you right now, he is one of the toughest SOBs in the NFL, without question. And he walked off the football field, guys. They didn't cart him, they walked him off there. Now, he probably had some intense physical therapy after it was done, but that son of a gun walked off that football field. May have been even a loss, but that game right there, I got a whole new respect for Brett Favre, because they showed the bruises on his body afterwards, and he just looked raw. And, you know, you got to hand it to him. But that right there, though, that game is remembered in your head. See, you remember that game. Out of all the playoffs in the last 5 years, that's probably one of the biggest games, unless your team was really in it and you remembered it. But if your team wasn't in it like mine, that game stands out in my mind. And that's the reason why – and the NFL, they need that. But Roger Goodell is not going to let that continue. That was a clean game. All those hits were hard and they were legal. Now, the coach who was opened up his mouth and got on tape about what they were doing to him at the bottom of the pile, ripping the head, ripping the knees and everything like that, you know, that he just can't let that go unpunished. But I think there's a better way of letting Roger Goodell do it. I think there is a different way of doing that where they can hand down that punishment on that team. And I think that's get the players involved with, or get the owners involved with it, so they can get their hands dirty in it too. So Roger Goodell gets paid a lot of money to be the scapegoat of the NFL, and by gosh, he earns every penny of it, because people like you, if we're not kissing, you know, the NFL's butt because they're playing on ESPN every week, you hear that from regular people who don't have any connections to where it will affect revenue for either their station or their TV. Everybody else don't respect the guy, and that's just the way it is, and you hear it everywhere. Down here we have an ESPN channel. They kiss the NFL, but the NFL's butt all the way around here. You get onto the fan, oh, they just jump all over them. So that's just the way it kind of works out.
Yeah, but Sonny, I'm going to ask you a question about Vilma. Should he shut his mouth, quit asking for proof, and just take his punishment so he can come back and not get blackballed, or would you keep fighting if you were him?
He's got to shut up. If they're not going to let Sean Payton back in, they're not going to let Jonathan Vilma, who offered up his own money, into it. I mean, Sean Payton, hey, I love Jonathan Vilma. I love what he does, but who's bigger? I mean, if they're not going to let the biggest guy back in for a year, they're sure in the hell not going to let these suspensions that they have down, they can appeal them all day long. They're not going to be changed. If they're not going to overrule Sean Payton's, they're not going to overrule the players, and that's just the way that part's going to work.
Well, what do you think about the different games? Like, Green Bay's got two players now that's going to be suspended, you know, the majority of half the season. Do you think that's fair? The Green Bay has to suffer for these players, or do you think I don't know.
I don't know if there's something within the contracts or the agreements that they can get some kind of compensation for it. I don't know. I have not gotten that deep into it. That's an interesting question, because should they get some kind of compensation, whether it be from the Saints or the NFL, as maybe, you know, having another player, being able to get another player or whatever the case may be, I don't know. But I think there has to be some kind of compensation for that to the teams that have the players who have been suspended. That's an interesting question. We're going to have to follow up on it. I don't have a clue.
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, because it goes down. And the crime was committed with another team, and now it's, you know, now the punishment's been divvied out, and it's, I don't know. I'm agreeing with Sonny. This is a very interesting question, and a very hard one to answer. I mean, obviously, something, you know, some type of punishment has to be served by these players. So my initial thoughts would be, they did the crime, so I mean they've got to pay the penalty. So I mean, at this point I would say you have to suspend them, but the team should have some flexibility of bringing in some other guy to replace them, and maybe it not count against their roster limit or something like that,
or their salary cap. Yeah.
Yes, that's a good point. The term buyer beware pops into my mind. If you go out and buy a car, you know, and you drive it for a couple of years and it falls apart, you're not going to get your money back. You know, the warranty's over, whatnot. That's the same thing with this. You have to know who you're hiring to come play on your team, and maybe the interview needs to be better, but I'm sure no player's going to come out and say, I had a bounty system over here in New Orleans I'm coming from. But you just have to take responsibility. He's on your team. He's a Green Bay Packer now, and now you have to pay the penalty. Yeah. But I agree with the cap, maybe reducing it to let him get someone else.
Yeah, something. I think there has to be some concessions to the teams that grabbed him up, because obviously, but maybe not. The NFL is not a very forgiving league if you kind of look at that the same way, though, Chris. I mean, when you look at the NFL, I mean, they really don't, you know, their heart doesn't bleed for bad behavior as far as that's concerned. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the NFL says, well, figure it out.
Yeah, they definitely don't accept the apologies very well. So, yeah, I agree. They're going to stand by their decision, and the teams are just going to have to find a way to make it work.
Definitely, gentlemen. Well, I'm going to keep listening. I got to get kids to bed and everything else, so, but I'll keep listening in the ear. Put me on mute, because I'm going to roam around with my phone, so put me on mute and I can still listen.
All right, thanks for the call, Sonny.
Thanks, Sonny.
You have a good one. That was a great call. That was Sonny. He does his own radio show, The Couch Potato. That being said, every Sunday morning, I believe it, at 12 Eastern. So it's a great show. He's one of the top radio hosts in the country. And he does a great job. Chris, I know you've listened to his show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I listened to his live fantasy show. It was awesome. Sonny's just a class act and a great guy.
The draft, he was following round by round, pick by pick. It was just amazing to see their guesses or their predictions and see if they came true. So it was a real interesting show last week. And he does a lot of different shows. So thanks, Sonny, for coming on. We appreciate it. And, yeah, this bounty gate is just a mess, Chris. So we're about to get off this subject. But I'm just wondering how many other teams are gonna go through this. Do you think all the players now see that nothing good can come out of saying anything about it? Do you think they'll just keep it hush-hush, or do you think it'll stop completely?
Yeah, I think definitely with the punishment that has been handed out here, I think you're going to see a lot of the teams that, you know, are currently participating in some type of bounty program, you know that management is telling them, stop it. Whatever you're doing, cease and desist, you know, let's clean everything up, get everything on the right, because, you know, the NFL's watching, and they're just looking to make an example out of somebody else, so let's not be that second example. So I think this is definitely going to put this to bed, but I guess we'll find out, you know, in the coming months and over the next year to see if any other cases come out of this.
I agree. We're going to go to the lines one more time. You're on Way In Sports.
Hey, what's up, guys? Corey.
Hey, Corey.
Hey, Corey. How's it going?
Pretty good. Been listening in. Yeah, that was a very informative last call. I mean, I think Sonny must be an agent for some NFL player or something because he knows all the ins and outs and legalities of the league. That's all the stuff I'm pretty ignorant on. So it's good to have a guy like that kind of explain things to you.
Sonny's amazing, man. I've listened to his show, and that's how I started. I saw an ad for his radio show, and I listened to it one day, and it was just – I've been on his show a couple of times, actually, and it just – hearing him talk, if you can tell, he knows everything. He knows what he's talking about, like you said. He can give you deep inside stuff, and his guests that he has on the show, NFL players, NFL coaches, NBA coaches, so he has a lot. I think this is his fifth year doing the show, so he's very good.
Yeah, I'm going to check out his show. You'll have to let me know when it's on.
Definitely. So, Corey, what do you think about the – do you think this is fair for what they did to Vilma?
Yeah, like you guys were saying earlier, obviously they must have some kind of proof on him, and they're just choosing, for whatever reason, not to actually release it to the public at this time. But, yeah, I mean, granted, I mean, given that they must have proof, I think it's pretty fair. And going back to what you guys were saying with those Packers players, yeah, I don't know what their ruling is on that, but yeah, I think they should definitely let them sign some guys in those guys' places and maybe give them the pay those guys were going to be making or something. It definitely shouldn't count against them, but yeah, you do have to suspend those players too and punish them for being involved in it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, it's just been this NFL, we just had the draft, but it's just been the death of Junior Seau, and now this again. It's just a lot of events going on in the NFL right now, and we're going to keep up to date on any new findings, any new suspensions, any news that comes out. You can listen in on our show. If you'd like to weigh in tonight, the number is 646-716-5564, 646-716-5564. Thank you, Corey, for coming on. We're going to change gears over to the NBA. Chris, you been watching the playoffs?
Yeah, watched the Hawks last night and just watched them absolutely blow a huge, important, pivotal game in the series. You know, the Atlanta Hawks, they did what the Atlanta Hawks do, and that's lose winnable games. That's all I could say about that. Their shooting was terrible in the fourth quarter. You know, basically Rondo's out for the game, and here comes Paul Pierce. Nobody's got an answer for him, so he pretty much just took over that game, and the series is tied 1-1 now, headed back to Boston. So, yeah, the Hawks, they don't look like they're really going to make much noise for the rest of the playoff series against Boston. So,
I agree totally. I agree with that, but I think Atlanta's got a shot, man. They just gotta go back on the road and try to win a game. It's hard to win a game on the road in the NBA in these playoffs. If you're a real good team, you can do it. Look at Boston the other night. Backs against the wall, down 1-0. Your point guard, you're probably your best player, you know, is out. And you come back and Paul Pierce just puts up a heroic performance. And it was just very impressive. And that's who I don't think Atlanta has. I don't think they have that kind of star power on their team that can really just take over a game.
They don't, Tarvin, and that is the one ingredient that they're missing. They have a lot of good players, but they don't have that one player, the go-to guy. You know, they signed Joe Johnson. They give him franchise money, but he just doesn't have that killer instinct that you need, to take a team to a championship. And until they have that, I just don't really see it. Really don't see them being, you know, much of a factor in competing for a championship.
I agree. And listeners, I hope you're not disappointing, but we're going to switch gears. We got about 15, 20 minutes left, and we're going to hit on the college playoffs, actually. And Corey's still on the line. I've got him on mute. I'm going to bring him back on in just a minute. You know, Chris, they're talking about a playoff in 2014 for the BCS. And, you know, the format that I think should work and that I've always been in support of is the plus one. And, you know, you have a lot of fans. I've been reading and listening to different fans talk, and you hear these fans, Chris, say, I want a 32-team playoff. I want a 16-team playoff. If you want to kill college football out there, listeners, if you're listening, if you want to kill college football, how great and passionate that game is, have you a 16-32-team playoff or something. I think that would kill our sport. The best thing about college football is the regular season is so important. There's only 12 games. You have to win them all unless you're an SEC team, and maybe you can lose one, just maybe. And you get to play for a national title. If you slip up, you lose to a smaller team, a team you should lose, or a team you should handle easily, you're gone. There's really no forgiveness. If you look at Alabama this past year, they lost to LSU at home, which was, you know, the number one or two. I think they were number one, lost by a field goal. If Alabama would have lost by 3 points to Vanderbilt, there would have been no shot. But the regular season in football is so important because you can't take a week off unless you're playing some junior college team. You have to bring it every week. And if you start expanding these playoffs, Chris and Corey, I mean, it's just going to get ugly.
Yeah, and the hard part about this playoff is going to, like you said, figure out what is the right mix, you know, what is the appropriate number of teams that we allow in these playoffs. And I'm kind of with you, Tarvin. I really like and would embrace the plus one format. But, you know, they're talking about going to, the four teams overall, which I think is a good start, you know. I think, you know, the everybody is wanting a playoff, and I think the NCAA is finally opening their eyes and realizing, hey, this is what everybody wants, and this is what will make the game better and take it to the next level. You know, now how they determine which four teams will be pivotal, you know, are they just going to take the top four ranked teams? Are they going to take, you know, the major conference winners? That's what I'm really interested to see what comes out of it, because to me, you know, I don't really care about, you know, who wins the Pac-12. Just give me the four best teams in the nation and let them duke it out to determine who the national champion's going to be.
All right, I agree. Let's go to the line. We have a caller. You're on Way In Sports. Who's this?
Hey, this is Brandon.
Hey.
Hey, Brandon. How's it going, man?
Doing great, man. How y'all doing?
Doing good.
Good.
Just want to say,
thanks for the call.
Been listening for the last couple of weeks. This is my first time calling in. Really enjoy y'all guys' show, and finally had the opportunity to call in and get off work for the whole week, so work hasn't been in the way. But I've been talking to Chris on Facebook and really interested in y'all guys' show, and hopefully that y'all get some momentum going and we'll get started with college football and roll on from there. So my point with I wanted to say something about what y'all were talking about with Roger Goodell first. You know, when you are dealing with billionaires and millionaires, I think that Roger Goodell's stance is no-nonsense. I think he's doing a great job. I think Chris alluded to the point that he has been the incidences off the field have, since he's been commissioner, has been cut greater than half. So I'm really proud of that. I think he's done a great job. And you know, I just think that Roger Goodell is doing the best he can, considering the egos and the money aspect side of the NFL that that we are usually ignorant to or not prone to hear about as much, because he knows the NFL players. And I applaud him for the strong stance that he's taken on the players and Bounty Gate and Spy Gate, all the things that have happened in NFL over the last year or two that really is just uncalled for. But like you said, with Jonathan Vilma taking the stance, suspending him for a whole year, that's tough for the team that he's with now. But like you said, he has evidence that nobody knows that he's not alluding to, that he's not let out. But I think, you know, he's doing the right thing. If it's that bad, if, you know, of course, Vilma will fight it, he'll probably get reduced suspension, but, you know, really, he's doing the best that he can with players and the money that he has to take into consideration every game.
Yeah. So what do you think about this playoff for the college football, Brandon? Are you in favor of it?
You know, for a long time, ever since the BCS has gotten so out of control with, you know, they're tweaking it every year, doing things. I think that the 14 playoff is a great thing. You know, I think they got to get it right. I think they got to get it better. I think it's, of course, got to be better than it is now, but they can't. I've heard a lot of scenarios going around with it's got to be a conference champion, but then now it's got to be a conference champion in the top six or five. I think that's great. You know, of course, I'm an Alabama fan. I think if that scenario played out this year, where it was just being conference champions, Alabama would have obviously knew about that. But their defense and the way they play this year obviously proves they were one of the best teams in the country in this generation. But if you had that scenario played out, they wouldn't have had an opportunity to do that. But I think that you definitely got to take the top four teams, and I think that they have at least got to be in their top two of their division or runner-up or something in the league. You just can't take top four teams, the Big East or the ACC or any, you know, one of the big BCS conferences and say, hey, you're a conference champion, you got to get thrown in. I think it has to be top five or top six.
Brandon, I agree. I agree that, you know, you said about the conferences. I think if you're going to do this playoff, just say, for instance, we're doing a 14 playoff. And last year we would have had, if you took the best team, you would have had LSU playing, Oklahoma
State
and Stanford playing Alabama or whatever. It would have been the same result, you know, because at the end of the day, they had the four best teams. Now, if you start bringing in the Big 12 team, the Pac-12 team, Big East team, Big 10 team, it's not a true championship, in my opinion. You have to have the four best teams. And I like the BCS formula, the way they calculate, you know, who the best teams are, because at the end of the day, I agreed with it last year to an extent. You know, I thought that was it. But you start bringing all these conference champions in, it's just going to dilute it. It's just not going to – you're going to have a West Virginia or Clemson – playing in these playoffs when they didn't deserve it. I think if the year, it just depends on the year. If, like this year, the SEC was dominant with the top two teams in the country, and even Arkansas could have been in there in the top three or in the top four. If that's what happens, that's what happens. You have to be able to let the best teams in there. You can't just bring it into conference champions, because Alabama didn't even win their division last year, and they were the best team in the country at the end of the year. So you can't just restrict it. You can't put all these restrictions on it. I don't agree with you got to be second in your division. You might be third in your division and still be the fourth best team in the country.
Yeah, and I've been hearing a lot of chatter, you know, from different blogs and different articles about, you know, these commissioners from each of the major conferences, that's what they want. They want to go to a conference, you know, champion type playoff. And I'm in total agreement. To me, you can't put such a restriction like that. And I really think it's just an effort by all these other commissioners, you know, that are not in the SEC, because they don't want what happened last year. They don't want two teams from the same conference playing for the national title, no matter if they are the two best teams in the nation. I think a lot of it's just jealousy on the Big East and you know, Pac-12, whatever, because the SEC, let's face it, guys, they're just dominating right now, and I think all these different commissioners, they're just trying to find a way to somehow put a chink in the armor, and I hope they just cooler heads prevail and they just do it the smart way. Just give us the four best teams. It doesn't matter if they're in the same, you know, division or the same conference. If they're the four best teams,
exactly,
let them play it out, you know.
Exactly. And you know, another thing is Sly tried to get this passed for years. And what it took, you know, Auburn got left out in 2004, which that would never happen again with the way the SEC's shown the dominance. The jealousy and the hatred of the SEC is finally what it took, and Sly's laughing because he's been trying to get this all along. He's been trying to do this, but, you know, Big 12, Stoops and all them, no, we don't want that. So, yeah, you're at home watching the national title. You're watching the best conference that's ever played play in this game, and it just ate them up. But, you know, they had to watch it still. But if you're a Pac-12 fan out there, Big Ten, you got to admit, guys, I mean, the SEC is totally dominant. And if you'd like to weigh in and disagree, give us a call, 646-716-5564. We'd love to have you on. And, Brandon,
I
appreciate it. Go ahead, Brandon.
I have one thing to add. You know, with the – it's got to be – you don't want to diminish anything done in the regular season with all things considered, strength schedule, with where you play your opponents, injuries, all that stuff takes into effect. You know, with – I think last year was kind of an anomaly. It's, well, maybe not even an anomaly, but if you think about it, how many games were decided by a last-minute field goal or a field goal miss at the end of the game? Oklahoma State, obviously, the day that they lost to Iowa State, they dealt with the tragic loss of their women's basketball coach. And then, of course, they lost on the last minute field goal to field goal. Looked good to me, but it went over. But you don't want to take away a team's whole season. They lost one game to an inferior opponent, and they don't get to play for the national championship. So me being you know, on the other side, you know, my team is Alabama, hoping that they would lose so that we could actually have a chance to get in. But you don't want to put your whole season on one incident like that. And that's why the top four teams don't necessarily have to be conference champions, but they've just really got to be the top four teams in the country, regardless of, like Chris said, regardless of divisions or regardless of as their third best team in their division. Even say conference champion or conference runner-up in the Pac-12 last year, Stanford wasn't even in the conference championship game. They would have technically been in third place in their division, in their conference, because UCLA and Oregon were the top two teams in the conference. So, you don't want to take it all into consideration. I think you're going in the right direction with the playoff system, tying it in with the bowl games, getting the best four teams. But I hope the reason why they bring in all of these other conference leaders to maybe shine a light, or maybe to knock them off their pedestal a little bit and try to get it where they understand it's not just about money, it's about getting the best teams or parity, but I think it's all going in the right direction.
Well, Brandon, thank you for the call, man, and can keep calling in, man. I enjoyed it.
Appreciate it, guys.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
All right, take it easy,
right.
Brandon.
Thanks, Brandon. Thanks, Brandon, for the call. Corey, would you like to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I'd say Brandon made some good points, and he's right about getting the best teams. But unfortunately, when you're dealing with these conference commissioners and school presidents, it's always going to be about money from here on out. I mean, I think we're past that point of it ever not being about money, and that's what's kind of ruining the game. But, I think we're taking a step in the right direction, and I agree with you that I don't ever want to see like a 16 or 32 team playoff in Division I football, but I think I might like to see an 8-team playoff and say you take, you know, you have those six BCS conferences, so to speak. Well, I say you have to knock the Big East out of that. But let's say you take the champion of those other five conferences, and then you take three at-large teams, like the three highest-ranked teams who aren't conference or aren't the champions of one of those conferences. I mean, they could be the Big East champion or some, you know, like Boise State. But they take those five big conference champions and then three other teams, which would still leave a team like a one-loss Alabama or a one- or two-loss Arkansas in the equation there.
I think it all depends on the year. I think it all depends on how the season looks. You know, like this year, I don't think it would have been as exciting because it was obvious who the two best teams were in the country, almost from the half of the season on all the way through. But, you know, there could be a year, just say this year, you have an undefeated Oregon team, you have an undefeated LSU team, you have a one-loss Auburn or Alabama team, you have an undefeated Oklahoma, one loss Texas. See, that kind of season could really benefit from an 8-team playoff because you have eight strong contenders. I think this year, I think it would have just been watered down, in my opinion, if you extended to eight. But I think the circumstances call, you know, just depending on how the season looks. Chris, what do you think? Do you think, I mean, depending on how the season goes, they should determine how many teams are in the playoffs?
I still, if I'm going to do this, if we're going to go to a playoff format, I just say throw the conference championship just down, you know, down the drain, and then let's take the best teams. I don't care if they're conference champions or not, you know. And if you do it that way, most of the time you're going to have the conference champions representative, you know, in that playoff. So that's why I'm a big fan of let's just take the best teams available, and if they happen to be in the best conference or in the same division or whatever, then so be it. You know, you just chalk it up to that. That's just a, you know, an anomaly. You know, it's not going to happen very often. But I think to tie the playoffs with the conference, you know, championship is a step in the wrong direction in my eyes.
I agree. And you have all these conferences expanding, and I mean, I could understand if there were four conferences in the country, and that's all it was, is four teams. And then you brought the conference champions from each, you know, each region to come out and play. That might make a little sense, but I'm with you guys. I mean, you just got to play the best teams out. And I guess, how do you rate it? Do they still use the BCS formula to determine who the best teams are? And then you have schedule strength. I mean, some of these teams might be like, well, you know what, I don't want to play Clemson. If you're Auburn, you might not want to play Clemson the first game. You might want to play Louisiana Monroe just to make sure you didn't lose a game early, you know, and when you're not ready. So I just like the best four teams, guys, and I've always been like that, and I could be wrong, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that disagree with me. But this year, would it not be great if we did have a 14 playoff and we saw the games we mentioned, like Oklahoma State, LSU, and Stanford, Alabama? I mean, wouldn't that be two great matchups? But, I mean, I know the outcome. But
yeah, and you know, and then that eliminates all of the talk of, well, hey, we didn't get our chance, you know. You know, I know that Oklahoma State, they feel like that they were you know, left out of the picture, and so to me, you take those top four teams, and then, you know, at that time they have a shot, you know, at winning it. And I still think the outcome would have been the same. I think it would have been an LSU Alabama rematch, you know, but at least Stanford and Oklahoma State would have had their shot.
Yeah, I agree. It's a tough deal, but all it took was the SEC monopolizing the entire conversation after the SEC championship and on about, you know, even before that they were talking about it. Even after the Alabama lost to LSU, the ESPN was promoting that game. They were promoting Alabama, you know, to play, and they were the best. And you had a lot of people outraged over that. I even heard Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State's coach, say, you know, I guess you want to see a 9-6 game, or do you want to see a 49-45 game?
But yeah,
there ain't no way they would have scored on LSU. I don't care.
You're right, though. The success of the SEC has brought this playoff conversation, you know, and now it's brought it to light, and the NCAA is reacting on that. So I firmly believe that the success that the SEC has had on winning national titles over the last 6 years is a huge factor in this decision.
Corey, you got anything else to say?
I mean, just it's kind of changing topics here, but we were talking about LSU playing in the championship game, and basically it was making me think about how horribly they did. And brought to mind, I was hearing something yesterday or today, I think, didn't Jordan Jefferson sign with an NFL team yesterday?
Oh, man.
I don't know.
I was hearing a little bit of yesterday.
I didn't hear that. That would be almost, who is it, the Raiders? Do they need a fourth quarterback?
I don't know.
I was I couldn't remember, or actually I don't think I heard what team he signed with, but I did hear on the radio yesterday when I was driving around through town that I just caught a little bit of what they were talking about. But, yeah, supposedly he signed with an NFL team yesterday. So
yeah, he has no shot at making an NFL roster. I mean, that is
– No. I mean, if he wants to convert to linebacker or something, he might, because, I mean, he was pretty good at keeping the offense on the wrong side of the 50. So, but
I agree.
But yeah, I'll have to look up and find out the details on that. But I just didn't know if you guys had heard that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
But I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it was just a joke. Maybe it was a May Day joke or something.
Well, all right, Corey. Well, we appreciate it, man. We'll see you Sunday.
Yeah, it was good talking to you guys. Yeah, talk with you later.
All right, thanks.
See you, man.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
Yeah, see ya.
All right, see you, Corey. Sonny, are you back on?
No. Hey, am I on?
Yes.
Hey, what's up? My name's Elwood.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, Owen, how are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good. Pacers just won, so I'm extremely happy. Beat them bad. Hey, what I called about was, what do you guys think about Butler moving on up to big dog status?
Well, that's a good. It's about time. What do you think, Chris?
We're talking about Butler?
In Indianapolis, yeah. They're moving on up in conference, and they're setting them up to start being one of the big dogs. You know, and it's wow. I don't know. I think everyone's treated them like a fluke. And which, by the way, you don't go to a tournament twice in a row when you're a fluke, but we'll bring that up. But I don't know. It's just, it's like wish fulfillment here in Indianapolis, because it sucks because our three big teams are in Bloomington, West Lafayette, and South Bend. You know, we don't have a college here in Indy, and now we do, because if they move them up to big dog status, it's like, wow. You know, but do you think they can do it? I think they can, but I'm a little biased on Butler.
I actually love Butler. I love their coach. I love their grittiness, their program. I think Butler deserves to be there just as much as anybody. And now with the, like you said, you don't make two conference, you don't make two finals championships in a row, and it'll be a fluke. Those guys were good, and they play discipline. Their coach is one of the best in the country. His name is slipping my mind for some reason.
Brad Stevens.
Yeah,
that's it. But he is awesome. I mean, he's a great guy to play for, and these recruits love him.
What do you guys think about the University of Illinois backing up with the Brinks truck full of money and offering him all that to come there? And he said, no, I want to stay here and grow Butler.
That's
proud of him. Because, you know, Peyton Manning, Denver waved a big check in his face, and he was gone. I mean, they waved a big check in Brad's face, and he stayed. I thought, wow, somebody with some character. Like,
yeah.
Wow,
you know,
so rare.
Yeah, Brad Stevens, he reminds me a lot of a young Coach K. And, you know, when he made that second – well, even after the first final game that he made and played against Duke, you know, he had everybody in the country lining up just to hand – I mean, he could have basically wrote his own check, and he decided to stay at Butler. He wants to grow the program.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I really commend him. I think
if
he's able to,
Illinois was big.
Yeah, if he can build that program up, and you know he's definitely on the right track to do that and make Butler one of the premier programs in the country as far as college basketball is concerned. I mean, yeah, kudos to him.
Yeah, because he's put the program on the map. Because I had somebody say, is that a newer school? It's like, no. And like, when was that founded? I said, 1847. They said, oh, really? So, I mean, he's putting them on the map because Butler's been around.
Well, him staying at Butler, you know, showed they're in that status now. I mean, he didn't leave that school to go to Illinois because he thinks Butler is better than Illinois, and it is.
Well,
I mean, right now, as a basketball school, it is.
Well, and he can grow that into a major program, and he's in a major city. He's actually caused a talent drain in the Midwest. There were guys who were going to go to Chicago teams or Louisville teams or Dayton teams, and they said, nah, I'm going to Butler and Indy. I mean, he's actually caused a drain. You know, so it's kind of neat, because I never realized there's not that many people who can do what these players do. And when you get a new school on the map, it's a drain. It's interesting, I've never really seen a new sheriff in town happen in my lifetime. You know, I grew up with IU, Purdue, Notre Dame. That's it. And, you know, to have a fourth player, it's interesting, because before the Colts came, this was, a Pacer and IU and Purdue and Notre Dame. I mean, it was all basketball, that's it. And then, it's changed now, but it's interesting to have a team. I just wonder what you guys thought, because it's kind of exciting, you know. And, you know, hey, wait, before I go, what do you guys think about the Pacers? They whooped some butt tonight. Do you think they got a real shot at it?
I'm impressed. I'm impressed because after the first game, I was under the impression, like, okay, the Pacers aren't ready for this stage. But, you know, they took game two and then the win by 23 points on the road in game three. Game three is always that game that's the most important. And Pacers won it, and Pacers will win the series in six games, if not five.
Well, yeah, they've got tickets for game five on sale. And I'm like, I don't know if we're even going to need it. You know, they win this next one. But I don't, it's interesting. And, you know, Larry Bird, I'm not going to lie to you guys, I kind of thought he got that job because he's Larry Bird and he's from Indiana and blah, blah, blah. But I think he's pretty good. He's put a pretty good team together, and he doesn't get in a big hurry. You know, he's took a while to build this team and get it the way he wants it and pick people. And I'm sorry, everybody kind of blew Tyler Hansbrough off as a so-so. And I mean, he grabbed him up, and look, you know, I mean, he pulled a guy off IUPUI. You know, I mean, the guy can see talent. Don't you guys think Larry Bird's a lot more than we thought he was?
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you on that. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, Larry's done a really good job at assembling that team. And, you know, the one thing that Indiana lacks is that superstar player that really puts them on the map as far as the NBA marketability is concerned. But, you know, when you got good team chemistry and you got a group of, you know, 5 to 10 guys that play together, I mean, you know, the sky's the limit for this team. You know,
yeah.
I'd like to see them go out and get a nice proven veteran player with a little bit of star presence, just to kind of help them, you know, just establish some type of leader. Because when I look at the Pacers, I really don't see that go-to guy. You know, who are they going to trust to take that last shot, you know?
We call it the Reggie Miller effect. But
yeah.
We have no Reggie Miller.
Exactly. So,
but who does? I mean, Reggie got overshadowed by Bird and Jordan. But don't kid yourself. He was right up there with him in his own right. I've seen the Pacers be down by 6 points, and there's 2 minutes left, and Reggie won it. You know, boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom. And
he was a super clutch player.
He was, because, man, you think, well, this is over, and it's like, we only got 1 minute to go, and we got to make four. Boom, boom, okay, well, we did. We won, you know.
Knicks-Pacers, you remember the Knicks-Pacers game back in the Reggie Miller days where they were down like 8 with 50 seconds left and okay. Reggie Miller brought them back to win?
Oh, yeah. I've seen Reggie do it many a time live. You're like, well, it's all over. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. It's not.
you need Spike Lee in the stand. That's all you need. And Reggie Miller to have a good formula.
Yeah, we need celebrities here to sit in the stands. That would help, you know. But, you know, hey, I'm going to hang up here because I know you guys got a limited show, but I wanted to get your take on Butler and the Pacers. You know, it's kind of nice to see basketball coming back here, you know. So
I bet.
Well, you know,
I appreciate the call.
Yeah, hey, Fergo, you know, the Super Bowl was interesting because we had all these East Coast people here, and there was a Pacer game before the Super Bowl, and they were all walking around there with their jaws open because they were in Indiana for a basketball game, and it kind of made me realize, we kind of blew our basketball heritage away for the Colts and the Peyton era, you know. So it's kind of nice to see the Pacers doing well, not all the focus on the Colts. So good deal. Yep, keep up the good work, guys. Great show.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. Call back. We enjoyed it. That was a great call. We appreciate the call. And we probably have about 10 minutes left, Chris. And we're going to go back just 1 second to college, the football we were talking about. That was a great call, by the way. Yeah, we're both in agreement of a playoff, and we're both in agreement of the four teams, and we just want to go back, and probably in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start our college football. Once the NBA gets over with, we're going to really start hammering down college football, Chris. I'm very
excited.
Let's do it.
I'm ready.
And I know this Sunday we have Noel Goss coming on. He's going to discuss Auburn with us, and then in the next week or so, we're going to have Jake Crane come back with us. He couldn't be with us this past Sunday night. He had an emergency come up, and that happens in life. So I'm looking forward to having these two guys back on the show, and we're going to be on Sunday night. It's 7 p.m. Eastern time at 6 Central time, and we'd love for you to join us. Chris, any final thoughts before we go?
Well, you know, this again, you know, NBA playoffs are alive and kicking, and you know, I'm really interested to see what comes out of this college, you know, football playoff format. I don't know, you know, when they're expecting to, you know, release more details, but I'm really eager to see what's going to come there, and just looking forward to, you know, whatever news events comes up, you know, in the sports world. I guess really now, I guess we need to be on Saint watch. You know, who knows the other players are going to be suspended. So yeah, it's just going to be a very exciting week in sports. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, I want to just chime in on our last caller. He was talking about Butler, and again, it's these kids that play for Butler and this coach, they understand. I mean, this guy does it the right way, I think. He's not flashy. He doesn't go out and try to recruit all these different – he recruits a team that gels together and plays hard and buys into his system. And if you're in Indiana right now and you're in the Midwest, you better watch out. There might be a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And, you know, it just kind of reminds me, you know, when I'm watching basketball, that anybody can win.
To be the man, you've got to beat the man.
That's my favorite. I had to play that one time tonight, but yeah. The Butler is a great team, Chris, and I look forward to watching them. And, you know, I love March Madness, but when there's teams like that, you know, that VCU and the Butlers of the world that come in, I mean, it's exciting to see when they're doing good. And because, you know, they're not the big dogs. They don't go out and recruit the top all McDonald's All-American players. But, you know, these coaches, there's a lot of good coaches out there, Chris, that are unrecognized because they're at smaller schools. And once they get a chance to get on that stage, you know, it's showtime.
Exactly. And it reminds me, too, the coach from VCU, you know, he basically took that program to new heights. And, you know, that's what makes college basketball so great, like you said, because – everybody loves to root for the underdog, and in college basketball, that's where you see where, you know, a lot of these underdogs, they can upset the big guns, you know. I mean, just look at Duke, you know, this past tournament, you know, they get beat by a 15 seed. So, you know, that's part of the appeal of the playoff, you know, especially in college basketball, and that's what makes it so great.
Yeah, you just. I mean, you just see, you know, in football, it takes a while to turn a program around. Like, it takes 3 or 4 years of solid recruiting. In basketball, look at Kentucky. They were not relevant anymore, and all of a sudden Calipari comes in, recruits in 3 or 4 McDonald's All-Americans, and they're in the Final Four, or, you know, and they're winning championships. Butler could do the same thing. All they have to do is recruit well, and with the coach they have and the passion these guys in Indiana play with. You remember the movie Hoosiers, these guys love basketball just like we love football in the South. So
exactly.
It's just exciting to watch team from Indiana play with the passion they play. Even
yeah.
The Pacers, man, they love Reggie Miller and they're passionate about him. And they're passionate about their football up there with Peyton Manning, or was Peyton Manning. But, I mean, Indiana is a great little place. And the Butler, kudos to them. And I'll be pulling for them for years to come as long as he's coaching the team.
I agree.
And let's have a good show. We've had some interesting topics, some callers, but I just want to go away with one thought. Chris, do you hear what Harbaugh said about New England and the Saints championship? Did you hear that?
Yeah. Basically, he made the comment that, you know, with the Spygate incident there with New England, that basically their championship should, or their, you know, their Super Bowl should have an asterisk by it. And, you know, what I thought was very comical was, you know, no later than 24 hours after he made those comments, he's already rescinding them, saying basically, hey, that's not what I really meant. I didn't really mean that, you know, that
well,
they were tainted in any way. And I thought that was just kind of a cheap cop-out on his part.
Yeah, he should just own it. But I can't put an asterisk beside the Saints because they're hitting people hard and you can't really take away their championship. But the Patriots were actually cheating. They were stealing plays and knowing everything that was happening. So I could put an asterisk. Actually, I would have taken that away from them. If I was the commissioner, you know, something like that happened, I would remove their championship from them because they are cheating. Where the Saints are just, you know, they're hitting late and it's dirty in ways, but it's still, there's referees out there that can throw flags, you know, and eject people from the games, and it'll all even itself out. But the Patriots were just blatantly cheating. And you notice ever since that came out, they've never played again. They've never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, weird thing there, you know, as soon as they stopped doing that, you know, their success at winning Super Bowl championships all of a sudden went away. You know, but I kind of take it to the standpoint that, you know, this is kind of common practice in the NFL, you know, stealing, you know, signals and stuff like that. They took it to another level. I don't know that I would go so far as to say, hey, you got to put an asterisk by it. And I think they went in, they rectified the situation, and they did about as much as you reasonable person would do as far as the discipline that they handed out. I don't know that
but
I'd go
cheated.
Quite as you on taking championships away, but
well, Chris, they have a ring on their finger that says I got this because I cheated. You know, I mean, that's just my opinion. Everybody has theirs, but I think that's bad. I remember when that came out, I just laughed. I was like, wow, they took it to a whole nother level. Like you said, it's okay. You know, in baseball, if you steal it, if they catch you stealing a sign from the catcher, you're getting one in the ear hole.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to steal a sign, but in football, that's pretty bad. So, anyway, that's a funny thing I had to share with y'all. And Kevin Youkilis for the Boston Red Sox, he's on the DL with his back. I actually didn't surprise me at all because I wonder if Bobby Valentine's comments just made him just be like, whatever, I'm not going out here and giving effort for this man. And he might have just put himself up on the shelf until he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bobby's definitely brought all this on himself. And you know, that's what happens when you call out your star players, you know. As soon as one little thing goes wrong, they're going to say, oh, man, I can't play, you know. Whereas if they know you have their back, you know, they'll run through a brick wall for you. And like,
it's kind of,
you know,
it's kind
like
of like working, Chris.
Exactly.
Kind of like you're at work, you know, your star employee, you know, you go beat him up when everybody else is goofing off. He's working overtime. He's carrying a load, and you bust his chops, so to speak, and next thing you know, he's calling in sick the next day. He's like, I'm not going to take this, you know. Let's let them carry the load.
Exactly.
And that's probably how Youkilis was, just like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I know I would do the same thing if I was over there busting my tail and then my boss just throws me under the bus. I'm not doing anything, you know, extraordinary for him. I'm not going to put myself on the line or risk injury for him if I know that he doesn't have my back. So this will be definitely a good lesson learned for Mr. Valentine going forward. And definitely if he doesn't get it by now, you know, he's never going to get it. And he's basically the ship in Boston is sinking, and I don't know that there's anything that he can do to win those players back. I mean, at this point, the damage is probably almost too much to overcome at this point.
Oh, it is. It's too much. And I think Boston could still win some games, and it would be because of them. You know, they want to play, and they've got good player, good hitting. They need some pitching, though. But as far as them playing hard for him, it's not going to happen. They're not going to get
over.
They're not going above and beyond for this guy that threw their star player. Somebody you look at, when I think of Kevin Youkilis, I think of a scrapper. I think of someone that's tough, that's gonna play hurt, and he doesn't wear the batting gloves sometimes. You know, he's just a tough kid. And you go out and throw him under the bus. What does that say? What kind of example does that set for your entire team? You know?
Yeah.
It's just. But anyway, this was a great show, and Sunday night we're on, guys. We're on at 7 Eastern. We want you to join us. It's going to be an hour and a half show. Again, we'll have Noel Goss. He'll be breaking down Auburn, and I hope we have a lot more callers and listeners. And all the listeners out there, thank you for listening tonight. And our numbers, our show's growing a lot, and it's all because of you.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks, everybody, that's supporting the show, and appreciate all the great calls tonight. We really had a great time.
And if you the Sonny show, I'll put it on. My chat wasn't working, but I'll put it on my Facebook page. Sonny called earlier. He runs his radio show out of Dallas. It's a great radio show. If you haven't listened to it, you need to, because it's one of the best I've ever heard. So I'll be putting that on my information so y'all can listen to his show on Sundays. And I think he does it, too, on maybe Thursdays. But anyway, we're going to leave you, and we hope you have a good rest of the week. And, Chris, we'll see you Sunday.
All right, buddy. Well, have a great rest of the week, and look forward to the show on Sunday.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you later.
All right. See you, buddy.